Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.
Hello and welcome back to Ringside Rewind with me, Tris Dixon, John Rawling and John Rawling's dog, and Ian Dark. we are here talking about sort of the state of the nation, really. I mean, for want of being the grumpy old men of boxing, which I think is a role we're finding ourselves in increasingly, talking about the Halcyon golden days of the past. John, it is fair to say it's not what it used to be, is it? I mean, you're still around, you're still on the going to the fights, you're still doing stuff, and you're still on the ground. I mean, do you still get the same enjoyment out of it?
It's certainly changed. It's the media side of it has changed vastly. Social media has changed things hugely. And I think for many people, possibly myself included, you kind of judge the boxing world and the state of boxing by the state of the heavyweight division. And I'm afraid to say that much as we're peddled the information that it's booming and that there's huge fights out there and everybody's making vast amounts of money, that at least is true. I'm afraid to say it doesn't stand comparison with the boxing world of 20 or 30 years ago, in my opinion. And as a result of that and the preponderance of these various YouTube fights, I think it's very much, you know, lessened in standing in the sporting consciousness from where it once was.
Ian, what's your take on things?
Well, I probably agree with John. We would say that, wouldn't we? I'm always reminded of old Bert Sugar, bless him, bless his soul, you know, who used to smoke that cigar under his trilby every time we went to America, and we'd see him in the bars and he'd be doing his sound bites. And his great line when he was asked whether boxing was dead and, you know, whether its reputation was in tatters, and he said boxing ran out of reputation sometime around 1910. So the obits have been written for this sport for a long, long time. I think they were being written when Jack Johnson was around, you know, when none of us were. So it's easy to be doom mongers, I think, but everything John has said is right. And, you know, I think one of the biggest problem is now every other week or every half decent fight that goes on the TV is pay-per-view. Now, that's great or can be great for the fighters, but what you're doing all the time is driving the sport away from casual viewers into a corner. And that's what's happened in America. Here's a lot of the root of the problem. There's a whole generation grown up in America with, you never saw Oscar De La Hoya even, or Felix Trinidad, or Sugar Shane Mosley, all that lot. They didn't see Tyson, most of them, because everything's been pay-per-view for so long that the sport is kind of in a ghetto. And you know, I think that's a huge issue, and it's happening now in the UK. Even modest fights, it should be nowhere near pay-per-view. I mean, I've not been commentating on the sport now for a few years, but you know, when I was commentating on it, it had to be a big box office smash for it to be on pay-per-view on Sky that I was working for back then. And now you're getting fights that aren't even really, you know, wouldn't be anywhere near that, being shunted into this outlet. So I think that's one of the problems.
Yeah, I think another problem, and John, you might want to correct me on this. I don't know. You might have more of an appetite to be out and be more social than me. But I think one of the problems is the start times as well. Like, quite often these big fights are getting off at about 10 past 11. I remember it used to be, oh, are you going to stay up for the fight from America? Now it's tough for me to stay up for the fights from the UK. And I mean, it's certainly, well, you know, when I've had, you know, since I've, you know, my kids are now 17 and 15, but with them growing up, it was pretty much forget about staying up for a fight that started at 11 or 11:30 at night, because I was going to be up at 5 in the morning with the kids. So
yeah, that was deliberate, though, Trish, you know. That's deliberate that starting at that time, because they're trying to catch everybody coming in from the pub who've had a few drinks. So keep it on as late as possible, and they go, oh, let's buy the fight, you know. And well, it's not, the thing it has marketing.
It's not just the pay-per-view, but also subsequently as well, Ian. I'm glad you pointed that out, because I kind of do know the method behind it. But,
yeah,
you know, I've tried – there's been a couple of fights in the last 12 to 18 months where I've tried to get my son and my wife to watch with me. And I've got them invested in the pre-fight build-up and all the rest of it. And I mean, we'll come on to undercards in a bit, but they've never made it through an undercard to the main event because it's on so late, and they've sacked it off by 10:30, and they're like, I'm not waiting up for this, I'm off. So, John, I mean, what's your take on the start times?
Well, I agree that it's not. I don't think it's. I know why it's done, and I think Ian's, you know, surmisal of that is probably right, but I think it's tough on the fans, some of them, particularly the younger ones. You know, kids aren't going to stay up till midnight to watch a fight, and it's also awful for those people who are actually at the venue. You know, I mean, if you're somewhere like the O2 where there is a late night tube service, then that's not quite so bad. But some places, if you're getting out into the night at midnight, 11:30, and then trying to organise some transport home, it can be very, very difficult. And I think as so often, the fans are sometimes the last consideration when they're trying to put together big money deals to earn as much for the promotional companies, the TV companies, and of course the fighters as they can. I think the fans are sometimes forgotten.
Well, so suppose, Ian, there was the old thing as well about wanting to put the fights on later so they can maximise returns at the bar at the live venue as well.
Yeah, well, all that kind of thing as well. But, you, I mean, remember, you know, way back when people used to get up in the middle of the night and go to the Odeon in Leicester Square in London and watch big fights coming in from the United States at 4 in the morning. Now they stayed home. I mean, you know, 1.5 million people stayed up till goodness knows what time at night to watch Ricky Hatton fight Floyd Mayweather. You know, Ricky made a fortune out of the excessive pay-per-view on that. But, I mean, this is just one problem. I mean, John's right. It's the fans don't really matter. What matters now is pay-per-view returns. And also, if you want to be a pay-per-view star, you've got to have marquee value, so you've got to make huge splashes at sort of ballyhooed press conferences. I mean, I don't know if that's a new thing. It's been going on for, well, basically since Ali, isn't it? This kind of, that kind of thing. Everybody's trying to ape and make it a crazy press conference. So you get this sort of generally a phony confrontation that stage managed to get things into the paper. So, you know, there's another thing. But you're right, we do sound like real old moaners. There's a generation out there who are under 25 years of age who would get excited watching KSI fighting, well, Tommy Fury, etc.
You mentioned that, Ian. I was dredging around a few facts and figures when we were thinking that we were going to talk about this, and I see that Tommy Fury versus KSI is now into the top 10 biggest pay-per-views in the UK ever, which is staggering, really, because, you know, I mean, if you're going to be brutally honest, neither of them are exactly star performers, are they? They're famous for being famous.
Yeah.
And they've brought a huge audience, a new audience, and dare we say it's an audience who really don't care too much about the level of boxing which is being shown.
Well, it's like watching the Isthmian League rather than the World Cup, isn't it? Or minor counties cricket rather than the Ashes. So you'd have to say the people who are making those decisions, their reasons aren't for watching the quality of the boxing, are they? They're to do with other social phenomena.
Yeah, well, I mean, sorry, Trez, I was just going to say, while we're on that one, the one thing that boxing is having to learn from the likes of KSI is how to promote a fight. You know, the one thing they do very effectively is reach out to huge audiences and get them watching.
And I suppose allied to that, John, is, you know, and I've seen it, I've seen comments about this on social media, but people are in their seats wanting to watch the entire show of these Misfits bills as well. So there's something there that boxing needs to learn from, because, you know, it's funny talking about casual fans and boxing's ailing popularity. Is I got back from the Canelo fight a month or so ago, and my mum said, how many people were there? And I said, oh, 20,000. And I said, and she said, oh, how many fights were on the undercard? And I said, oh, about 10. It was several hours long. She said, was there 20,000 people in for all of that? And I said, no. She said, well, when did they come in? I said, for the main event. You know, hardly anyone was in for any of the fights on the lead up to the main event. They come in, show their face for the main event, and disappear. And it's unlike the Misfits, where people are buying into it from start to finish. So something's really got to happen with these undercards, because they're played out to tiny houses, yet people have paid tickets for the whole night.
And sometimes those undercards, let's be honest about this, sometimes those undercards are not very good. And so you can hardly blame people for not sitting there all night when they're watching, you know, in many cases, a talented ranked prospect against somebody who's there just to make up the numbers.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? And then obviously, just, I suppose, talking about the live audience and just my own experiences, you know, my kids have both shown a slight interest in going to live fights. And I said, well, you know, we either go and sit in the cheap seats and we watch it on a big screen above the ring, because we couldn't afford ringside, because you'd be looking at, you know, at least a couple of hundred quid each to a major fight. So 600 quid before any expenses to go and watch a fight. So it's really hard to bring through the next generation of fight fans, because it's so expensive to go.
What about taking them to the York or Bethnal Green? What do they charge there these days?
Well, not as much as that, but then it's a harder persuasion to get them to go to that.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if anything like that was near me, then I would have loved to have done that, but it's a bit of a hike for me.
I mean, another thing that's wrong with boxing, and this has been true for a long time, and I don't see a solution to it, there's no organization with any real power or muscle which is acting for the overall good of the sport, you know, calling for the massive fights to happen, you know, to make sure that there is a fight between Fury and AJ, Fury and Usyk and whatever, and right the way through the divisions. The sport has always been dominated by squabbling promoters and egos and TV company rivalries, and, you know, they couldn't agree what day tomorrow is, most of them, let alone get a complicated fight on legally. You know, there's another issue, and that issue is at the core of why a lot of big fights that we should be seeing, we're not seeing, because nobody can agree them. And then I blame my own industry as well. In the past, television has indulged fighters for too long. And I think a classic case of that is Mayweather and Pacquiao, when that was the fight everybody wanted to see. The rival TV companies in America kept paying Mayweather loads of money to fight other people. And they kept paying Pacquiao, the rival TV company, paid him loads of money to fight other people. So why were they going to have the fight against each other until it was almost too late to matter?
Well, that's what we've had with heavyweights, isn't it? With Fury fighting the likes of Tom Schwartz and Wilder fighting Hellenius and Joshua fighting Franklin. You know, they've all been making boatloads for these fights. So why would they want to mix up with one another?
When Tyson's getting $50 million reportedly to fight this Francis Ngannou, and apparently nearly lose to him as well. I didn't watch it, but obviously Ngannou was better than we all thought, to give them credit. But what worries me about that, you know, and Tyson Fury being on the floor in the fight, well, I'm a bit cynical about it all, if I'm honest with you. But that almost legitimizes those kind of freak show matches. Somebody's going to turn around to us. You know, a promoter's going to turn around and say, oh, well, you all ridiculed that Tyson Fury and Garner thing. And look what happened. You know, he nearly lost. So these guys, you know, can fight. So line up the next one.
Yeah, John, do you feel it opened up Pandora's box to these crossover fights now? Because, you know, I think everyone expected, or a lot of people expected Fury would box his head off and stop him. And hopefully, you know, I think for many, certainly purists or maybe the older guard like us, we're hoping it would put a stop to them. But as Ian contends there, it might have done the complete opposite.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. Because I must confess, I thought that Fury would absolutely outclass him and that it wouldn't be a fight by any stretch of the imagination. What happened was something that we hadn't anticipated. Now, why that happened is open to speculation, I suppose. But it certainly hasn't, I don't think, done the sport any favours, because inevitably there are going to be more fights like that now because it's made money. Although, having said that, apparently in the United States, the viewing figures, it's absolutely bombed. And I don't get the impression it did particularly well in the UK, although those figures tend not to be bandied around, do they? When they're not very good. But I don't think many people watched it. I think a lot of people caught up on it on social media afterwards and saw the punch, that left hand, which, you know, delivered whatever sort of weight of punch it was to Tyson Fury, leaving him on the floor. But I think people were catching up afterwards rather than actually investing their 30 quid or whatever it was to sit down and watch it live.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because watching that fight on the night, which I did for my sins, I was obviously entertained by it because it exceeded expectations, and every round that went by and Agana was still in there pitching, it was different to what we expected. I suppose I was looking with a holistic view, in the sense that quite often we come out of big pay-per-view fights and they haven't delivered for one reason or another. At least I was thinking, well, blimey, the people can't say at least they haven't got value for money this time. You can say Fury didn't show up or he overlooked Ngannou, but you can't say that for the 10-round fight you didn't get value for money, because
I'm not sure I agree with that, Tris. It was a pretty awful fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think where I was going from, where I was coming from with that, is it was a damn sight closer than we thought it was going to be. And obviously, had people tuned in and Fury danced rings around him for 2 minutes and then finished him with a big right hand, people would have said, oh, it was a complete mismatch. Why did we have that?
Yeah. But in a way, the discussion you're having here and what you're saying, Tris, kind of underlines the point that I was making, that it's made it something that is apparently acceptable to do now, because promoter can turn around and say, you know, look what happened in that one. Let's do another one. Let's have another apparently circus freak show with, you know, Joe Soap, the YouTube star, taking on Tyson Fury or whoever, Wilder. I think it's encouraging if the figures weren't good in the United States.
I find it interesting. I do find this topic really interesting because, you know, I'm not a UFC guy or an MMA guy. When I was in Vegas recently, I was sat down with Shakur Stevenson, and you know what some of these outlets are like. They want the clickbait headlines. And that someone asked Shakur Stevenson, if you could fight an MMA fighter, who would you want to fight? And Shakur said, I'm a boxer. Like, I want to define my legacy as a boxer, and I'm not really interested in that. However, I saw him ask that same question this week, and he's called out some sort of MMA fighter now. So like you guys have inferred, it could be, and I wrote this on the night, it could be Pandora's box has opened for these crossover fights, because a lot of these fighters in MMA aren't on terrific money, and the big money's over in boxing, you know, on pay-per-view and everything else.
It's a great shame. And of course, part of our remit on this show is, you know, we talk about the past a lot. Nothing wrong with talking about the past, by the way. When you think of it, you know, that golden era you know, of Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Tommy the Hitman Hearn, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran. They all fought each other, didn't they, on those fantastic nights in Las Vegas. And what a series they gave us. And you look at Ali's career, and he fought everybody, didn't he? Frazier, Foreman, Liston, Patterson, Holmes, Shivalo. I mean, a lot of them, all those heavy shavers of the era. But, you know, things have changed. Social tastes have changed. And maybe, I think, too, at some point, people in the United States in particular went off boxing before the whole pay-per-view thing I was talking about. And I think Mike Tyson was part of that. You know, sensibilities changed, and you know what they'd have taken from, you know, when Jack Dempsey and Rocky Marciano and that were around, they weren't going to take somebody like Mike Tyson coming on their TV and telling me wants to drive the nose bone up into the brain and quotes like that, and his general behavior. I think people switched off it, and also because there was much more sensitivity about boxing injuries. You know, blood, we've all been at fights where, you know, boxers have been, well, unfortunately lost their lives with blood clots on the brain. And that, I think, turned off a lot of middle America from boxing. And a bit like NFL in the United States, where they nowadays, you know, the mums and dads want their kids to do something safer, like play soccer, as they would say. And not go into that because it's dangerous because of the head injuries. So that's been another factor too in boxing being pushed out to the fringes. I don't think boxing's dead. I think when it's big, it's still big. You know, you put that Carl Froch, George Groves fight on at Wembley and 80,000 people turn up. And if you put Tyson Fury on against AJ still, even though AJ's reputation's gone down the pan a little bit, if you put that on at Wembley and still sell the place out and make seven pages every day in the newspapers. But really, those occasions are not coming along often enough for the sport's health.
Well, the sport was in a big, big problem, wasn't it, in the States back in the 60s when Benny Parrott and Emil Griffith fought, and Parrott, it was on national television. He was very badly hurt, subsequently suffered a blood clot on the brain and died. And boxing very nearly got kind of cancelled in the United States at that stage. And it was only, I think I'm right in saying, Tris, it was really only the emergence of the exciting new talent, Muhammad Ali, which stopped the sport drifting away and becoming even more marginalised than it already was.
Yeah.
Well, I think
there's always been debate, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I've got old copies here of Ring Magazine from 1950s and 1960s asking, is boxing dead? So, and you know, we're 60, 70, 80 years on from that. So, but the marginalisation is an important topic because obviously Showtime have just announced that they are leaving boxing. And obviously we see now, you know, there used to be a designated boxing writer for all the major newspapers over here and in the US, and that's now gone.
I could name them all. I remember, you know, when I first started covering, every paper had their own boxing writer, didn't cover any other sport. They just covered the boxing, you know, old Sidney Hull's on the Express, Colin Hart on the Sun, bless him, Peter Moss on the Daily Mail, Neil Allen on the evening London Evening News. You know, the big columnists would all turn up whenever it was a big fight. I mean, he just got more space in the newspapers back then as well. I mean, part of the reason for that, and I think a lot of sports have suffered because of that, you know, maybe athletics, which John and I have both covered as well. I think, you know, that's been pushed a little bit to the margin. It's harder to get stuff in the paper now because of the explosion of reportage on football. You know, there's so much and so many football stories dominating the sports pages, there's barely room for anything else sometimes.
Well, you could argue that's the case with TV budgets as well, right? You know, everyone gets the needs to get the football and see what money's left for everything else once the football rights are secured.
Well, that's right. And too, and also, you know, the sport's disappeared, hasn't it, from terrestrial television largely. I'm not saying they don't ever have any boxing on, but you know, I can remember a time, and it wasn't that long ago, I mean, Frank Bruno's all his early fights were on Wednesday night, the night after the fight had happened, you could watch Frank's fight on Sports Night on BBC One, you know, 9:30 at night the next evening. And, you know, remember Reg Guthridge and Jim Watt doing the commentaries on those ITV fights at 10 o'clock, Eubank and Ben, that era.
What about Barry McGuigan as well, Ian? I mean, when he won his world title in 1985, I think I'm right in saying there was something like 18 million who watched on that occasion. And I know that when it finally happens, if it finally happens, Tyson Fury against Usyk is going to be a hugely significant fight and it will get a lot of coverage. But there'll be nothing like 18 million who get to see it. Nothing, not close, you know, because it'll be on pay-per-view. It'll be at least 30 quid a throw, maybe more, to be able to watch it. Yeah, maybe 50 quid, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be 18 million, are there? And that's the most significant fight out there for most people now. And most people won't see it, at least won't see it live.
So what we're really touching on here in our big debate is, and as you say, there have been a lot of obituaries written about boxing for a long time. And every time you look in the coffin, there actually isn't a body. There probably still isn't a body even now, because there'll always be a market if the product is good enough. But is the product good enough, often enough, anymore? And, you know, 95% of fighters out there don't get any publicity at all, do they? Which makes me laugh, because the guys who are in the spotlight are moaning about the coverage they get. Well, try being the 95% who don't get any coverage.
Well, I was going to say, I think 5% of the people in boxing probably get 95% of the money, right?
Yeah, sure.
So I think, just going to the Showtime thing as well, they've had three massive shows this year. They had Canelo Charlo for the twin undisputed titles. They had Gervonta Tank Davis against Ryan Garcia, and they had Errol Spence and Terence Crawford. Those are noted to be the three biggest events of the year. All three in Vegas, all three Showtime / PBC, and now Showtime are leaving boxing at the end of this year. When you take those three big fights out of the equation, it's a very, very thin year for boxing. But also, even with those fights in the equation, the losing fighters probably barely run two or three rounds between them. So it's not been like, you know, I know it's easy to, you know, even not harking back to those days, Ian, of the 80s, but, you know, even the Eubank Ben Watson Collins of the 90s, or the De La Hoya Vargas Mosley stuff of the noughties. You know, they're just not getting it right. And for some reason, they're, you know, because these guys are fighting maybe once a year, it allows an awful lot of time in between for them to not get their careers back on track and not to try and get more momentum behind themselves, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It's the same in the UK, isn't it? I mean, you've got Sky, who are doing it through the Boxer group. You've got TNT working with Frank Warren. You've got DAZN with Eddie Hearn. But if you go beyond the biggest names, if you were to walk down Regent Street in London, say, and say to people, right, here's some boxers to talk about. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, now name me three more, not heavyweights. And I don't think there are many people who could do that, even sports fans.
No, someone would say Eddie Hearn somewhere, wouldn't they? Because Eddie's probably in the top three or top five famous people in boxing.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, but the fact that it's so top heavy towards the heavyweights, and that there's not that broader appeal, it begs questions about the promoters, surely.
Yeah, but I also think there is this. You know, it's easy to give the heavyweights a bad rep, and obviously they haven't had the fights that we've wanted this year at all. And you know, for the last few months, when we've all sort of become resigned to that, we've sort of accepted it even grudgingly. But there aren't a load of people calling for the light heavyweight fight between Beterbiev, Bivol. I'm not sure why those guys are getting away with it the way that they are. But also, just going back to yesteryear, not that long ago, and this, Ian, would have been your Sky years, we had Steve Roberts, Wayne Alexander, Takalu, and Richard Williams, Jamie Moore, and all those light middleweights. And very rarely did they fight each other. I think we had Takalu and Alexander, but other than that, it was very hard to get those guys in. And then more recently, we had Matthew Macklin, Andy Lee, Darren Barker, and John Duddion, none of them fought each other at all. It's really frustrating because we're losing eras and generations of fights that we want to see, and they're just not happening. And, you know, people say, oh, they get made in the end. And I mean, do they always? I mean, geez.
Well, they don't, do they? Lennox Lewis v. Riddick Bowe, there we are, didn't happen.
Yeah.
never did get to see that. Mike Tyson against Lennox Lewis, way too late. Tyson was all washed up by then. Pacquiao Mayweather, too late, really. So getting people to fight in their peak, that takes money, and it takes a willingness in the two camps that get the fight on. So there was a different mentality, you know, and I think the classic case of two great fighters meeting head on in their peak was Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns in the 1981 fight they called the Showdown in Las Vegas. Bang at their peak, and what they produced was something for the ages, something people still talk about. So I don't know if you can ever get back to that now, because a lot of time has passed and attitudes are different and social mores are different.
The proliferation of television channels doesn't help, does it? The fact that, you know, you've got various, let's take UK as an example. I've already just mentioned all the channels who cover boxing. If you throw Channel 5 into the equation as well, I think that the television companies bear some responsibility, because they're not encouraging those big fights that you're talking about, Ian, as much as they should be doing. I think they should be holding those who make the fights to account and making big fights happen more than they do.
Absolutely, yeah. They should be driving a hard bargain and saying it's this fight or there's no deal.
Also, don't forget, we've got the sanctioning bodies, and, you know, they're making up as they go along still these years on, you know, with letting fighters hold on to belts without having to defend, and creating these ridiculous mandatories out of nowhere with guys who've never fought anybody. And, you know, who in the top 10 actually belongs or deserves to be in the top 10 of a governing body organization? The answer is really whoever's paid to fight for an international belt or intercontinental belt beforehand.
Well, it's a joke, isn't it? I mean, I used to joke about it when I was covering it, really. I said, we're pretty much getting to the point now we're going to have more titles than boxers. we'd be covering, you know, some of these belts sound like hotels at Heathrow Airport, didn't they? The Pentacontinental, you know, light welterweight championship. And it was passed off as being a real belt. And it was an attempt, basically, to hoodwink the public, and for that matter, TV executives who probably should have known better, into believing that what they were having put in front of them was a great fight. I mean, I got into a bit of legal trouble with Frank Warren for describing one of his WBU title fights at the time. I said, well, it's, you know, really, I mean, this is to a real world title fight what Grimsby Town are to the Champions League. And that was the fact of the matter, and it was, you know. But, you know, Frank took exception to it, because to him it was a legitimate world title, and I said, well, we're going to just have to beg to differ about that, Frank. You know, time's gone by. I mean, great fights still will come along, thank goodness. You know, we got Crawford and Spence this year. I mean, I think it turned out really. I mean, it's a bit sad that should have been a mega fight. But it really turned out to be just a good trade fight, didn't it? With a fantastic performance by Crawford.
Yeah, because I mean, hopefully
it wasn't
that was
brilliantly promoted, was it? It wasn't brilliantly promoted. It should have been a lot bigger than it was.
But why wasn't it, John? Why? What was it hard to sell that fight? Are those names reaching out beyond the boundaries of the sport like those stars of the past used to? You know, if you didn't know boxing, you knew Sugar Ray Leonard and Muhammad Ali were, didn't you? You know, and I think people got to know about Hearns and Duran and that. So your average sports fan who didn't cover it, you know, or follow it week by week, they knew when a fight like that came up, it was something to stay up for.
Well, it's got to be down to the promoters, hasn't it? Because, you know, neither Spence nor Crawford are particularly charismatic people away from the ring. They've been brilliant in the ring, particularly Crawford. You know, he's shown himself, I think, to be one of the great fighters.
but they're not particularly charismatic away from it. So that being the case, it's down to the promoters to come up with ideas to make it that much bigger. And in that particular case, I don't think they really did. It wasn't sold, was it? And the UK audience wasn't what it should have been. And it didn't resonate in newspapers around the world as you would have anticipated. And that's got to be down to promoters not doing it as well as, say, MMA promoters do.
Yeah, but there's a lot of hypocrisy, you know, goes on as well, though, John. You're saying that, and your point's a good one, that fighters now are required to be more than just excellent at their trade. They've got to be salespeople as well, because of the things we've talked about, how it's hard to get boxing out in front of the public, the amount of room it gets in the newspapers. So now you'll get a situation where a fight, probably a stage managed fight, breaks out at a press conference, and everybody, but people write about that and they condemn it in the columns and say, look at boxing again, is boxing's reputation is dragged through the mud by this latest, but they've written about it and now you know about the fight. So
Have you
got to do something like that to sell a fight nowadays? Two guys being respectful to each other and being fantastic fighters, does that sell anymore? Or if I'm the promoter, have I got to kind of put some circus on to just get people to write about it?
You make a good point. I mean, obviously, I was at Spence Crawford, and I remember the week before I flew out, I actually... I'm going to watch the All Access programs, which is Showtime's version of 24/7, and I wanted to sort of binge watch the two episodes back to back, and it was very hard to get into them just because they were two sort of nonplussed characters, very laid back and chilled out, very similar. And you know, obviously the stuff from Ricky and Floyd and Oscar, they were so different, they counterbalanced. It was very dramatic, and the personalities were so different. And I think people do want, you know, see, going back to the old John Wayne days, and Sonny Liston said it, you know, people want a good guy and a bad guy. And there was no really good guy or bad guy in that. And, you know, it's the same, even if you watch, you know, the pro wrestling stuff, they will never match two guys that people love in the main event. They always put a good guy and a bad guy. And
I wonder how they did it, Tris, with Jack Dempsey and Gene Tunney back then, you know, 120,000 people turning up. I mean, I'd been fascinated to know how that fight was promoted back then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it was just much more of a pure sporting thing back then, wasn't it? And I don't know how much the characters were involved, or I don't know. Was it? But then maybe people were in love with Dempsey by that point, and you know, I don't think anyone would have cast Tunney as a bad guy at all. But I think, you know, if you've got those guys that are overwhelming good guys, and we saw Joshua when he was on his run, filling out 70, 80, 90,000 at Wembley in the principality.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's what happens. But I don't know. It's a tough one. But one thing I will say is, you know, the level of production for these build-up shows is next level. You know, that's one thing where we really have moved on and is better than it used to be. I'm not so sure that all the content is, because we've had some belters over the years, but the production of these pre-fight shows are great. It's just they're doing the job and bringing in the audiences required.
Well, those 24/7 shows that HBO started doing, that was a great idea, wasn't it? You built up a little soap opera surrounding the fight. So people watched all of them. And by the time they'd finished with it, they'd engrossed a lot of people saying, God, I've got to see what happens in the fight now. Now that I know now this sort of human interest story behind this guy and, you know, this old trainer who's come back from cancer and all kinds of stuff like that. And you knew all the plots and subplots of the fight. It was brilliant. I think
the loss of HBO to boxing in the United States was one of the biggest losses of all, because the way they covered the sport was quite brilliant, wasn't it, Ian? And, when they drifted away for whatever reason, I'm afraid that with it went an awful lot of sort of, you might say, middle America's casual interest in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you couldn't really be too praiseworthy of HBO. It was very, very classy coverage and authoritative.
By the way, we've talked about that death knell. Tony Bellew said this, and I've heard it said a couple of times before. The boxing is going to get in the biggest amount of trouble, and it's going to be mostly on the ropes when someone's gravely injured in a fight, and the person who's won the fight has been found to be taking performance enhancing drugs, that will be the watershed moment. Ian, do you agree with that premise?
Well, yeah, of course. I think that there's no disagreeing with it. That would be a nightmare scenario for boxing, but another nightmare scenario, and it might be what does put a stop in the end to these kind of YouTube fights, is, I think I've made the point before, boxing isn't like sort of seniors golf, where you can go out and do it at 70 and have a good time. You can get badly hurt in boxing, especially if you can't do it and you're in some kind of mismatch with somebody who can fight, which is liable to happen one of these days, that one of these guys, you know, one of these YouTubers pushes his luck a little bit too far and does get really badly smashed up. Now, how are the kids who follow that YouTube star, how are they going to react if he's lying critically ill or worse in hospital?
John, you could make
an argument about here in Britain, couldn't you? I mean, Tommy Fury at the moment is probably the third best paid boxer in the UK. He said that he's talking and thinking about moving on, about going and looking for legitimate titles. I mean, could you imagine him in the ring against Anthony Yard?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, isn't it? I say hats off to Tommy Fury, if I'm honest with you, because I think he'd never win a British title in just looking at it as conventional level of ability. But he's worked away, hasn't he, to become a major star and probably on his way to being a millionaire if he isn't already.
Several times over already.
Yeah, must be. John, the PED thing is interesting. I think that, you know, there's been a whole spate of recent tests over the years, recent positives, high profile positives as well. That's not A, doing much for the image, and B, it's not really helping the fan base latch on to their favorites. I think people have become increasingly dubious, I think it's fair to say. Do you agree?
I do. I think people are very cynical about boxing. They look at supposed heroes and they hear the stories about drug testing which has gone wrong, and it most definitely damages the credibility of the sport. And I think what damages it more on the back of that is the way in which people try to wriggle out of situations where everything would point to guilt, and yet they will wriggle out and try and get themselves back into the sport as soon as possible. And those who are governing the sport, whether it be the British board or the world organizations, don't have sufficient power and sufficient clout to do anything about it. Or if they do have that power, they choose not to use it.
Well, they can't afford to use it, John, can they? The British Boxing Board of Control, I think that's an open secret. They just don't have the money to pay what would be potentially a massive legal bill if taken on by a mega promoter. And that, I think, has been the situation going right the way back to the Michael Watson case. So I think that's just a fact of life. And it's a pity, because I think they're an honourable organisation doing their very, very best to have some kind of sway on what goes on in the jungle.
John, what positives can we take from where we're at today?
Well, you take positive, I suppose, from the fact that the top people involved in the sport are making humongous amounts of money. So the stars are still becoming very, very wealthy people. The Anthony Joshuas, Tyson Furies, Canelos, Deontay Wilder, etc. They are very, very rich people. And I think it's maybe too soon to just completely and utterly condemn the new audience which is coming in as a result of social media and YouTube fighters. Let's have a look at that in a few years' time and see where it's developed, if indeed it has.
Ian, I'll come to you with that in a minute. I think the interest. So it's interesting for me to have a couple of teenagers in the house, because I get to see.
You're not talking about us, are you?
I have more control over you two. It's interesting to see this unfold with a couple of teenagers in the house because, you know, my kids over here watched Tommy Fury and KSI and they were invested and interested and they were entertained by it. And they were like, wow, that was a good fight. You know, they got what they wanted out of it. Fine. Good for them. And also when KSI boxed, I think it was the Logan Paul fight, Billy Joe Saunders was on the undercard. I remember Eddie was trying to say, oh, look, it's going to bring non-boxing fans to you know, they'll be able to see Billy Joe Saunders and all the rest of it. Well, of course, that was the middle of the night for us. And we got up and my son, I said, oh, can we watch the boxing? I was like, oh, this is great. You know, me and my son bonding. And he just wanted to fast forward to the Logan Paul KSI thing, watch that and then had no interest in watching anything else, Billy Joe Saunders or otherwise. And so my experiments are that they're interested in the things that they're interested in and not really open to seeing the other side of boxing and maybe the stuff that we might be harking back to. But that's my own experience. And maybe there are people who are reaching out. I see Sonny Edwards has tweeted recently, like he's got some new followers because, you know, new fans of his because they have been brought in by KSI and all the rest of it. I've just not seen that firsthand. I don't know, Ian, but in terms of where John was, do you see the positives in where we're at with boxing at the moment?
No, not many, if I'm honest with you. I mean, I think what people want is, it seems now they want show business, celebrity, light entertainment, rather than what us three grew up watching and appreciating as a pretty pure sport. So things are changing. I mean, we're wrong to say, hey, it was all wonderful back then. You know, there was a time when this sport was controlled by the mob and the mafia. Do you know, going back to the 50s when newspaper columnists, probably being handed a fair wedge of money at times as well, were coming up with the verdicts at ringside in New York. So, you know, Blinky Palermo and, you know, Garbo were calling all the shots and, you know, that crooked guy Norris in New York. So, you know, there have been bad times before in boxing. I think really the sport as we know it is not dead, but it's in a bad way. Now, really, I think what's got to happen, and you two have hinted at it there, is if the kids are interested in watching a form of boxing, be it KSI or any of those other YouTube or mixed martial arts stars, if they're interested in doing that, got to find a way of saying, if you like that, you're going to love this. But, you know, what you just said, Tris, about your own kids, they're not interested unless they're invested in, they've got an interest in the life of this YouTube guy that, you know, like you'd have an interest on in a 24/7 about a fighter. How do you get them interested in watching the top quality of the sport, the likes of Crawford, you know?
Yeah.
They get interested because this is the real thing. These are the guys who can really do this. They're not just mucking around at it. So can we bridge that gap? Frankly, I don't know.
By the way, Ian, obviously you mentioned the mob and all the rest of it. I mean, I think it's worth noting here that the last few years, with the influence of Dubai money, shall we say, the influx of that Dubai money has created a really dangerous and volatile and unsustainable false economy for boxing in this country, where there's been so much money sloshing about in certain areas that now it's gradually leaving. It's leaving a lot of people high and dry and, you know, without shows to box on and all the rest of it. So it's, you know, the stuff about the mob, I mean, it's a little bit more contemporary than we'd probably like to admit, but yeah, it's a really tough position for the sport to be in. And now with the Showtime thing leaving America, it's going to be interesting to see where PBC stable do wind up, because there's talk about Amazon and Netflix and streaming, and you know, you can be sure that Al Heyman has seen this on the cards for ages because it's his stable of fighters, and there's no way that he doesn't have a place to land with his fighters already. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. But it's tough, isn't it? You know, because the same problems we've always had are what we will be facing going into the new year in terms of you know, if Joshua and Fury ever fights, how do we get the promoters and networks together in the first place to make it happen? I think they've already had three near misses at trying to make that, apparently, certainly two. So a lot of the same problems that we've always had, John, just, you know, or a lot of the problems we have now are the same ones. They've just not gone away and been resolved.
They're just the same sort of problems, just in a slightly different guise, aren't they? There's always been difficulties. You know, there were difficulties back in the 90s. Other people found it difficult to deal with Don King, didn't they? But they found a way of doing it. And you mentioned the mafia. Ultimately, it was the United States government who rooted them out of boxing, wasn't it? Robert Kennedy was involved in the prosecution, which ultimately sent Frankie Carbo to jail in 1962 or whenever it was. You know, the boxing finds a way to survive somehow, doesn't it? But it worries me that, well, I think Fury versus Joshua is a prime example. That fight 100% should have happened by now. And I fear that by the time it does happen, if indeed it does happen, there'll be two washed up fighters who'll be just clinging on to, you know, their names and making money out of that rather than fighting when they really should have done.
It's amazing that fight hasn't happened. That defies all the rules of what you know about the economics of boxing. There is so much money to be made, or there was so much money to be made out of getting those two together. They would have raked it in. I mean, how did they not agree to do it? I mean, it's absolutely bonkers that.
I mean, there was a time where Khan Brook was a nailed on stadium fight. By the time they fought, they were in the MEN.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just not happening. But also the thing is this, Ian, it's very hard, right? So Khan and Brook, you can imagine they were well paid and they probably fought, you know, no fair, no foul. They got their money and they settled what beef they had and all the rest of it. It's very hard.
Not as much money as they would have made if they'd fought 5 years before.
Well, I was coming to this. So the thing is, but look at Pacquiao Mayweather, right? They were sort of 5 or 6 years beyond where it could and should have been as a sporting spectacle. But it blew the pay-per-views out of the water. And there's no way it would have done more 6 years ago. So financially, it was a bigger success, even if from a sporting perspective, it was not what it should have been. So who are we to then dictate to the financial power brokers when to make a fight for the benefit of the sport, when they're obviously looking for the big payoff at the end of the day? It's very hard now to go back and say, oh, you should have done it X years ago, because they were laughing all the way to the bank, nearly 5 million pay-per-views for Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Yeah, except we were all saying it's in those years before it finally happened, weren't they? When is this going to happen? When is it going to happen? And then when it did happen, it was a poor fight, one-sided, and not a shadow of what it should have been those years previously.
Ditto Lennox Lewis Mike Tyson, just a one-sided, you know, one-sided beating up, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, Tyson was live for a round and then it was game over, wasn't it?
Yeah it's tough. So we're never going to solve this. I mean, it's been interesting chewing this over, and I hope people have enjoyed listening to us just chat about where we think the sport is. I mean, there have always been question marks, but I think this is a particularly important juncture for all the reasons we've been discussing.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, from the live event experience down to the crossover fights, down to the misfits, down to the new fans, because obviously, you know, we need new fans. We want new fans. We want the succession, don't we? We want people coming into the sport at all levels, and we want the young fighters and all the rest of it too. It's just it's a balancing act, isn't it? It's a balancing act because we don't want to lose the essence of the sport and what it is. John, what are your thoughts? you thought you had a powerful monologue from me there.
We're struck dumb.
You think I've nodded off?
We needed John's dog to come in there because he's been trying to get a word in edgeways.
I'm actually broadcasting while I walk around my house to avoid the dog getting set to start yapping and yowling because she's not had any fuss for the last hour.
Great stuff.
She thinks boxing's in a bit of a mess.
Well, she sounds very wise. But I think it's interesting. I think there's plenty of life left in this sport. There's a load of big stars. There's a load of talent. We're still in there pitching by our fingernails in the Olympics for 2024. And we are alive and kicking. It's going to be interesting to see where things go.
Alive? I'm not sure about kicking.
Well, alive and kicking and screaming. And I think the interesting, you know, but ultimately as well, there's nothing like it. We do get it sometimes, rarely, but we did get it with Josh Warrington and Lee Wood recently. Yeah. But when you know you've got a level fight or the best of fighting the best, it creates something special and there's nothing like it. We just need more of that, please. And I think, by the way, John, in terms of leaving you on that cliffhanger that I just left you on a minute ago, in terms of the best fighting the best and all the rest of it, I actually do think that there is a way that you can do this. And I do think shows should be structured now so that you can break them up. And I think you should have maybe an 8-fight show where you've got a main event. You've got two, what they call in the old days, semi-finals, where you've got two evenly matched fights, whether they're for a European or a British or an English title, but two even match fights over 10 or 12 rounds. You have maybe two knockovers where someone's expected to score a stoppage, and then you have two fights where you think they're going to go 80-72 or 60-54. And then you've got something for everyone, right? You've got some young guys getting some rounds under their belts. You've got a couple of highlight reel finishes for those who want that. You've got a couple of tough, gritty 50-50s, and you've got a main event that no one can pick a winner on.
I think that's KSI get a fight on your bill there? I mean, sounds to me, Tris, like somebody like you, and I'm only half joking here. No, I'm not joking at all. Should be in a supremo role, you know, somebody who knows the sport. But I tell you what, getting that ideal bill together is going to be hard because you can't make fighters fight each other. You know, I cover football as well, as I think people know. You know, I know Manchester United are going to play Liverpool twice every season, you know, and Manchester City are going to play Chelsea twice every season. You don't know what fights can happen. Fighters can turn their back if they don't fancy it. So getting that bill together, it's a great bill as you described it, a perfect sell. You know, and as a TV executive, if I was one, I'd be trying to snap your hand off to get that on and put it to air. But making those fights happen, that's the problem, isn't it?
Well, I think one of the things that has worked in the semi-recent past was that Super 6 tournament with Andre Ward, Carl Froch, Arthur Abraham, Andre Durrell, and that mob, because they all fought each other. And yes, there were sort of, we lost people, and the runners and riders weren't the same finishing as they started. Jermaine Taylor fell out and Durrell fell out but it was always going to be a grueling sort of survival of the fittest style tournament because the best fought the best. And what I liked about that was even with a loss, you weren't eliminated from the tournament because it was a point scoring thing. So there was it wasn't the same, oh, lose your O and you're trash sort of thing. You know, if you lost your O, you could come back and still be a player in the tournament.
If the money's good, and the money was, I think, pretty good for them all to do that and be invested in it, it's a great idea, isn't it? Let them hear to that. More of that, please.
And then you get 2 years of good fights for the best fight and the best, which is great. Yeah. So I don't know. But John, gents, it's been a pleasure. I don't know. It's been an ordeal.
It's sort of depressing, really.
The thing is, no one wants to be negative and no one wants just to bash it. I spoke to Barry Jones on the way back today and I was telling him what we were planning on doing. And he said, I don't mind you guys doing it because you do it from a place of authority and experience, but also a genuine care for the sport because we all want it to thrive. And, you know, and whoever's thriving in the sport, whether it's Frank, Eddie, Aaron, Al Heyman, generally, a rising tide lifts all ships in the sport, you know, and what's good for one generally is very good for the other. So we just want a successful sport that's bringing in the masses week in, week out, and putting on the big fights.
I think we need a new superstar to come through. I think like in the early 1960s, we need a new star. You know, Canelo's, I think we've seen his best. He's not going to be getting any better from here on in. Likewise, Fury and Joshua. We need a new star and somebody who the world, the boxing world and the sporting world can latch onto.
Oh, yeah. Send us the modern day Mike Tyson. 12 or 15 fights in the first year and start lining them up like 10 pins. That would be great, wouldn't it? That would be great. But yeah, I don't know where it's going to come from. Hey, it could be this guy, Carmel Morton, that they're talking about from the Mayweather gym. Just turned 17 years old, made his debut on the on the Spence Crawford, on the Canelo bill, and he's going to be out on the Demetrius Andrade bill against David Benavidez. He's going to be fighting for the second time, and everyone's been talking, ranting and raving about how good this Carmel Morton is. Maybe it's going to be someone like him. But yeah, you're right, John. The time is now for a big star to emerge, isn't it?
Well, every sport needs stars, doesn't it? You need headliners, marquee names.
True, because obviously in your other gig, Ian, you know, we're coming to the end of the Messi and Ronaldo era. So who's going to be the next? Who are going to be the next two to carry it on?
Yeah, well, I think it's a different argument, isn't it? I think with football, which is a team game, and people are invested there. They grew up supporting teams, and they're never going to not support those teams. So it's a different setup completely. But you know, we shouldn't knock the new generation. You're right. It's good that they're watching boxing of some sort, but you hope they'll come round at one time to watching the absolute cream of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. John, any closing comments?
Well, if you're wanting a new superstar, I hope that new superstar is an American. You know, it's great to say, let's have another Brit, but I'd like to see a real top American star come forward, because I think if the sport is struggling, as it unquestionably is to a degree in the United States, then it becomes difficult for the rest of the world.
Interesting stuff, gents. Well, it's been an absolute ordeal. Thank you so much for dragging me through it. And thank you all for listening and joining us on Ringside Rewind. And we will be back soon.
Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.